as I reread the title, Challenges to Selection, I think that probably gave you a misunderstanding of what this presentation is about, because you all have really big challenges in making your management decisions of what protocols to select. And my comments will not be directed at which protocols to select, but the challenge that has faced this group since the inception, and that is, do we have specific labels for each of the products relative to each of the protocols? And the answer is no, but we'll look at it quickly, and I can't see those things, so I'm coming down here. And I know that y'all can't see this one, and y'all can't see that one, so I'll try to use this pointer, which usually I fail to do very effectively. So, why do we use AI? Why are you interested in these protocols? Just a quick reminder, in the 50s, frozen semen became available, was quickly taken up by the dairy industry. The beef industry didn't take it up because of the hassle primarily of estrus detection. We got lots of protocols that you've seen and will continue to see. Is there value in AI and the use of these protocols? The answer is absolutely yes. But each one of us, if we're going to use a protocol, is going to make our own decision as to whether or not it has value in our beef production enterprise and what are the relative cost effectivenesses of those different protocols. We have the products that are available are progestin, as Justin has already identified, as Dave reiterated. These products are there for specific purposes. The progestogens block estrus and allow the cattle to stand in the starting chute of the horse race. And when you open the gate, they all come out at the same time. Prostaglandins regress corpora lutea and are critical components. And then estradiol gonadotropins are used for stimulating ovulation or changing follicular development. In terms of the process for approval of products, there's a very specific regulatory process used in every country, every development country in the world. In the United States, that's directed by the Center for Veterinary Medicine under the Food and Drug Administration. And this slide is simply there to give you an indication of what that process is. And the bottom line is that for any product that you're using, that's either OTC or prescription, the quantity of time required to get a product approved is somewhere between 8 and 15 years for the easy ones, and somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $35-40 million for the easy ones. The more difficult ones, and those would be bovine somatotropin and antibiotics, and now steroids have been placed back into the difficult ones, then the quantity of time and the quantity of money required is a lot longer. What this slide attempts to do is identify the sections of the new drug application that are required for the approval. And the first section up there on the top is the chemistry manufacturing. And for your information or value, that assures that whatever the drug or whatever the product is it really has in that container what it says it does, and it's pure and clean, and it's not going to cause any harm to the environment or to the animal from the manufacturing process. We have target animal safety, and that set of studies is directed to assure that whatever that product is used for, that it is safe for the use in the animal when used consistent with the label. The efficacy section is there to assure that when you use the product, the efficacy of that product will be consistent with what the label says it is. And then for environmental human food safety, we do extensive studies to assure that there are no residues present from use of that product in the animal products, milk, eggs, meat, whatever from those animals, and that if there are residues there, there's an extended withdrawal interval of time to assure that those residues are not present at the time of slaughter. And finally, we have to address environmental assessment. That was a major major challenge in the late 70s, early 80s. It decreased. It has now reared its ugly head and is now going to most likely, my opinion, increase the cost of any animal product developed. And so the attempt that I'd use is simply give you an overview that whenever you have a product to use, you have a very high degree of confidence that it's safe. It's to the animal, it's safe to the human, it's safe to the environment, and it actually does what it's supposed to do. In terms of, that's setting me up, I hope, to talk about label. Labels then are derived from the data that you just saw that would be developed from the chemistry manufacturing section, the target animal safety, the target animal efficacy, the human food safety, and the environmental assessment. All those data go into the Center for Veterinary Medicine making a determination of what this label can say. And the labels are going to be class specific. For this conference, we're talking about cattle, and the agency specifically puts lactating dairy cows in one classification. They're sacred. Beef cattle, beef heifers, and dairy heifers generally are lumped into a second classification. So if we do a study in lactating dairy cows, we get a lactating dairy cow approval. If we do a study in beef heifers, we may or may not get an approval for beef heifers, beef cows, and dairy heifers. If it's a claim that's already been established, we can get additional claims usually by using one of those animals. For prostaglandins, for GnRH, and for progestogens, for the pioneer claims, those studies were done in each of the classes of livestock: dairy heifers, beef cows, and lactating dairy cows. Whoops. In terms of specifically the label for OTC, one you can buy over the counter, not requiring a veterinarian's prescription, you see that the label identifies that it has to be adequately, you have to have directions that the layperson can use it. You have to identify what it's going to be used for and that the layperson can actually follow those directions. And then you have the whole array of what is it, what it's used for, are there any withdrawal times, are there any safety issues. If we go to the veterinary label, it's identical after the third line down, but the first one says, is there adequate information for the veterinarian to make judgmental decisions? It's only authorized by the use of veterinarians, so it cannot be purchased by non-veterinarians. But after that, it's pretty much the same between the two labels. So now let's look at the products. The progestogens, as you've already seen, are MGA, which is a synthetic progestogen. We developed it at Upjohn. It was approved in 1968 for use in the feedlot to increase feed efficiency and rate of gain and suppress estrus. I took responsibility of that product in February of 1968 after it was approved, and I failed to get it approved for estrus synchronization until my colleague John Chenault did in about 1992. The reason that we didn't get a synchronization claim is because the feedlot was much more important lucratively, and the regulatory atmosphere at the agency was such that there was not enough money to get it approved for synchronization, but now it is. The cedar contains progesterone, the natural hormone. It's in the matrix, and it comes out on a daily basis in sufficient quantity to block estrus. Prostaglandins. As a quick aside, I tried to bring the cedar into the Upjohn company two times, and the director of marketing came to my boss and said, if that three-letter word, which is not safety, tries to do it again, I'll fire him, and you will not keep him as an employee. A few years later, that marketing manager left, and a female came in as a manager for reproduction products and went to the new vice president, and it came right into the company. So that's why Upjohn got it from DEC in Australia. In terms of prostaglandins, that was my baby from day one. For luteolice, donepropstromethamine, we owned the patent for clopostanol, and that patent was traded off to Empirical Chemical Industries in the UK in a big human trade for drugs, and then it was developed as Estramate. And it's gone through a number of different companies, and you see quite a few Estramates and a number of additional prostaglandins. And then the gonadotropin releasing hormones really came to be in the mid-1980s, and they were developed for treatment of follicular cysts in dairy cows. And so that label really carries over for most of the GnRHs today, because that's where the market was. But they do what they're supposed to do biologically. Estrogens have been a thorn in the side of ARSBC from day two. I'm not sure if it happened in Manhattan, but it certainly did in North Platte. And the question is, should we use estrogens in our synchronization protocols? There are a number of published data out there that says that an estrogen does contribute positively to some of the synchronization protocols. They're available, readily available in some other countries. They're not available in this country, and estrogens as a steroid are very high on the concern list for regulatory authorities worldwide. Early on in the early years, Synchromate B was approved by the Center for Veterinary Medicine. It was a combination of norgestimet, a progestogen, and estradiol valerate, or benzoate, depending on which one had. And it was available and used extensively for extra synchronization of beef cattle. But in the early 90s, it disappeared from the market because the rate of return on the investment was not high enough relative to having a contract manufacturer continue it. As I say, we've discussed it for a long time. There's a regulatory pathway now to get an estrogen approved in this country, but it's going to be expensive. And so far, no pharmaceutical house has attempted to achieve it. There was a small, loose group of individuals out of Texas a few years ago that I talked with, and they thought they might be interested, but then they dropped out. Estradiol cipionate, ECP, I have the last bottle, I believe, in the world on my shelf, was approved for years and years. It was approved in the 1950s with zero data. There were testimonials from a veterinarian at Auburn, my alma mater, but before me. And in those days, the Center for Veterinary Medicine was just starting, so it was approved. And subsequently, we did some work that's never been published that said the milk concentration of estradiol 17-beta is not elevated when ECP is used at the label dose. But eventually enough individuals communicated with the president of Pfizer, who had purchased Upjohn, and the president of Pfizer called Animal Health Business, get it off the market now. We're not going to have a little dinky animal health product messing around with our corporate image. And so estrogens have a tough history, but biologically, there's nothing wrong with them. ARSBC does not recommend use of estrogens because of what I've shared and that there is no product available at the present time. These are the products, and each of these products I want to reaffirm that has an NADA or an ANADA, which means they have regulatory approval for a label claim. The label claims are identified up there for the progestogens, the prostaglandins, and the GnRHs. At the bottom of the slide, there's a combination, but the combinations are up here. And combinations become very important because, for the most part, you've only heard about protocols that have some combination of a GnRH, a progestogen, and a prostaglandin. Sometimes there's no progesterone in there or progestogen in there, but for all fixed-time programs, especially with cows, they're in there. And so there are combinations of prostaglandin with progestogens. There are combinations of GnRH with prostaglandins. There's no combination of a GnRH with a progestogen and a prostaglandin. And there are no labels with split doses of prostaglandins or combination of injection of prostaglandin and GnRH at the same time. So let us take us to the program. You've seen this this cartoon previously, and I'm going to have to step out here so I can see it because I haven't got it memorized, but I think I have most of it. And so what I've attempted to do is in each of these panels for the heifers and then for the cows, you'll see Lauderdale typed SLC equal yes or SLC equal no. SLC means specific label claim is yes or specific label claim is no. And so as you go through the difficulty of selecting protocols, the ARSBC has attempted to put a plethora of protocols that range from a simple single injection of prostaglandin to multiple injections of multiple products or use of progestogens. Each one of those has value which can be interpreted by you in your beef management system to be what you want to use or what you don't want to use. We've heard consistently about the fixed-time AI programs, which allow, if you go back and look at, remember Dave Patterson's graph had red, blue, and light blue. The red one was bulls. And if you could, if your eyes could interpolate between 11 and 31 days, about 21, the line crossed about 60% of the cattle pregnant from bulls in 21 days. You saw study after study of 60-64% pregnancy rate was breeding at 1 hour or 3 hours on one day of a fixed time protocol. To me, developing prostaglandins where we thought we had it at 80 hours, that's almost impossible. But it's real and it exists. And so, if we go through these individually, this has a specific, these are labeled. This one isn't because it has GnRH and cedar. This one's okay. This one isn't because it has GnRH and cedar. And anything with GnRH and cedar or GnRH with, there are no MGAs. Anything with GnRH right before cedar, that doesn't have a specific label claim. The others do. Now, is it dangerous? I am not a regulatory agency person, but I have been under the regulatory agency guidance for all my life. I think I have a moral and intellectual responsibility and accountability. And again, each of these products has a label approval that they are safe and there is no human food safety issue. The issue is no one has done this efficacy study to say that GnRH plus cedar is efficacious. ARSBC personnel and other academicians and other researchers have done those studies to say if they're on this protocol sheet, that means the efficacy has been unequivocally established. If we then go to the cow protocols in the same pattern, one of the difficulties which makes life challenging for those of us in my age group is that when you use a cedar for 5 days, you're out of label because it's approved for 7 days. That begins to make life somewhat difficult to accept. The split dose of prostaglandin F2-alpha in this 5-day cedar with the GnRH ahead of it, that's not approved. There's no approval for a split dose of prostaglandin or a double dose of prostaglandin that close together. So, in closing, there are a plethora of protocols. There are 10 for heifers. There are 8 for cows, plus 1 for both indicus cows. They all have regulatory approval for their general use, but when you put them into these kinds of combinations down here, they do not have a specific label claim. So, the dilemma that I choose to present to you is that either I missed the slide or I forgot to read the bottom one. And the dilemma is, what do I do? If my breeding management philosophy and approach is to select a program that incorporates approved products, but not with a specific label for that use, such as GnRH, Cedar, or the split injection of prostaglandin F2-alpha, my veterinarian and I have to come to resolution. Are we going to do this or not? And so for all the products, the breeding sheep protocols that don't have a dilemma, there's not an issue. For those that do, there's a dilemma. And so you don't see a closure of a suggestion of what to do, because that's not my responsibility. I was challenged 2 years ago that we have to have this presentation because it's an issue, and the issue is one that needs to be addressed by each one of us as we make our choices in terms of breeding management programs. Thank you.